bit of a stretch, but I can go hard for about 3 minutes. Hard.
Tell me what you want, tell me what you see, where you want to go, what you want to be. If you have a dream, you can make it there with a lot of work and a lot of prayer. If you take your time, gotta be precise, gotta have a plan, double check it twice. Wait, hold up, slow down, devil need advice. Someone's gone before, maybe talk to them. Then after you do, go and talk to him. Wait, it's gonna come, maybe not tonight. Take your time today, teach you something right.
Got a lot of friends, made a lot of ends. Twitter, you the trend, name a Bentley Benz. But you moving kinda fast. Keep sweats, you gotta make it last. Live every day like it's your last. But don't forget to have a blast.
Welcome to Time Out. I am your host, Sylvia Crowley Milbury. And before I get started with the show, I want to give a special birthday shout out to Cookie and Elmer Martin. They are husband and wife, and they actually have the same birthday. So I just wanted to say happy birthday to those two. I know that they are listening today, and you guys have started something because I usually don't do birthday shout outs. But happy birthday. I hope you guys are enjoying your day. I have a huge announcement. I just posted it on Facebook, so hopefully people tuned in to hear the announcement. I am pleased to announce that next week's show will be visual. I will be interviewing Charlotte Smith, and Charlotte is the head coach of Elon University. She's also the author of When Coaches Pray. But I will be doing a face-to-face interview with her in North Carolina, and you will be able to see the show Time Out for the first time ever. We'll have a live audience there on Elon's campus, and we'll take questions from the audience, so you do not want to miss history. Stay tuned for more details on my Time Out Facebook page. I'll post how you can get to that show, but I am so excited to be doing a show live where you can see it visually. That's been my goal and my dream for this show, to eventually evolve from radio to television. So I am one step closer to that dream. So stay tuned for more details for that. My guest for tonight's show, I'm so excited about this show because I've known her for a few years now, but really didn't realize exactly who she was until about a week ago when we started having conversations for this show. I'm going to just read a little bit of her bio because I want you to know what she does, but I don't want to spend the show talking about the intricate details of her bio because she has some incredible Time Out moments that I want to spend the majority of the time on. But my guest for tonight is Karen Wells. She has over 20 years of leadership experience in Fortune 500 companies. Her most recent role was a member of the U.S. leadership team as Vice President of Strategy for McDonald's. In this role, she was responsible for developing and communicating, fully integrating cross-functional plans to drive long-term growth of the CARE McDonald's U.S. business. Prior to this, Karen served as Vice President of Nutrition and Menu Innovation for McDonald's USA. And leading the menu innovation team, Karen developed all new food and beverage menu items that shaped the McDonald's menu for more than 27 million U.S. customers served every day and drove the multi-year strong business results for McDonald's system. Karen also led and developed McDonald's nutrition strategy, focusing on enhancing the nutritional profile of its offerings. She served as White House liaison for McDonald's efforts to improve nutrition across the nation and across the food service industry. There's a lot more. I'm going to skip down to the end. After 20 years of service, Karen started her new chapter and retired from McDonald's in 2012. She founded the AIW Group consulting firm, and we'll talk about what that means later, and she and her husband own and operate the Goodert School, a primary early childhood education school in Plainfield, Illinois. She lives with her husband and two children in Naperville, Illinois. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome my very special guest, Karen Wells. Karen, thank you for being on the show.
Thanks, Sylvia. I really do appreciate it.
I'm so excited about today's show. Now, I want to just jump right into your story. You had an interesting upbringing. You grew up in a single-parent home.
Yeah.
There were 9 children. Your mom had 3 sets of twins, and you're one of the last set of twins and is the youngest of the entire family by 3 minutes. You must have had both fun and tough times growing up with that type of family dynamics. Can you talk about that time of your life?
Sure, thanks. And once again, thank you for having me on the show. The opportunity to share my journey and timeout moments really is not about me, but the many blessings that God has truly granted me and just the remarkable people that I've had a chance to learn from and to help me through this journey. So with that, I call my mom, who's in North Carolina listening to this, Dorothy Smith Ashiro. I mean, she was a single parent, didn't get a chance to finish high school, 3 sets of twins. She had 2 sets, by the way, 10 months apart. So she had a total of 10 kids, 6 births, and 9 of us are surviving. And so she was, of course, a working mom that went through quite a bit as a single mother. And so many of my several of my brothers and sisters had to work to help support the family. And so oftentimes I heard you read my bio. So many times people can see and hear about where you are now, but they sometimes don't understand the journey. And living in a single-parent home, you know, we understood very clearly what public assistance was. We thank God for it. It helped us. Back in the day, we knew what a brown and a green food stamp was. It's didn't have those nice cards that we have today. Unfortunately, we understood lights being cut off, water being cut off. Those were things that we did experience. But the truth is that if you fast forward now, however many years later, God has brought all of us, every family member, to a really great place in Him. So it was remarkable, but it helped to shape who I am today.
Right.
And my mother was the foundation, really.
So, Mom, if you're listening, hi. You are an incredible woman.
She is.
I just kept 2 cousins who were twins and 2 nieces for 2 weeks at my house. Mm-hmm. And oh, my gosh, I can't tell you how tough it is with twins because they fight over everything. They fight over socks. They fight over underwear. They fight over clothes. And so we had to keep them separated. They couldn't sit beside each other in the car. They couldn't sleep together. You know, and then one is usually a little more gifted in one area than the other, or one is taller, one is thinner. You know, so you really have to esteem the other one because they're often compared all the time. So I can't even imagine giving birth to twins, you know, 3 sets of twins, let alone just raising twins. That must have been extremely challenging for your mother, to say the least.
Challenging, but she did it with such incredible grace. And truly, I can't tell you, there was definitely some fighting going on. I mean, it's a family of 6. And we were outnumbered by the boys, I'm going to tell you the truth. So we had to hold my ground up. Kudos to my sister Valerie, who kept things going and kept us all grounded when the boys got out of control. But she, she was just, it was remarkable. My twin brother and I didn't have a whole lot. My mom tells me I used to beat him up in the crib, but I don't remember that. But have a whole lot of, you know, fighting going on. If anything, my twin and I, Aaron, have a very supportive relationship.
Okay, we're going to transition into one of your timeout moments. And for, I think we're reaching a different demographic with tonight's show, so I want to remind some of our listeners and educate some of the new listeners about our show. The reason why I named this show Timeout is because my background is in sports. And so in sports, when you think about a timeout, it's that period of time when you pause, you assess the situation, you correct some things, you regroup, and then you resume with the opportunity to perform better. And so on this show, the focus of the show is life lessons that I've learned through sports. However, I interview people of all career paths, highlighting those timeout moments that have caused people to pause, assess, correct, regroup, and resume with the opportunity to perform better. So I want to talk about one of your timeout moments, Karen, where in preparing for this interview, you told me that you accepted Christ at a very early age, and you stood on the porch of your church, and you had what you consider to be a timeout moment. Can you talk to us about that period of your life?
Sure. I did. I was invited to church by a neighbor, Church of God in Christ in North Carolina, and I accepted Christ when I was 12, and I was the first at an early age to accept Christ in our family. Many have done so since then, thank God, including my mom, who's a minister now. But while we went through what was a struggle for children and sometimes don't understand, you know, where and why the resources aren't there and why we were going to those things, I remember being taught, and we went to church a lot, Sunday nights, Wednesday night, YPWW, the whole nine yards. But I remember in Rayford, North Carolina, standing on the porch, and we had had, you know, just some things that our family had gone through, and I described a few of them. And I remember standing on the porch of a small church in Rayford, North Carolina, and saying to God, I just know you have something better for me. This is not how you designed us to live as your people. Now, at 12, I have no idea where that wisdom came from or even what that meant. I didn't even know what a better life meant. I just knew that it wasn't God's ultimate purpose for us to struggle. And and I thanked him at that time in advance. I didn't even know what that meant. If you fast forward a few years later, I ended up moving in with my dad in Ohio, in Youngstown, Ohio, which is where I got really started. And I didn't start playing basketball until I was in the eighth grade, but my twin brother and I and my sister moved up to North Carolina, to Ohio with my dad, and things did start to turn around. That was a chapter that he had, as our lives are predestined, had in front of us to start the journey to a better life.
Wow. I read an article that talked about, basically about you being a generational curse breaker. You were the first to do something in your family, even though you're the youngest. Can you talk to our listeners about that?
Yeah, I was a first-generation college grad, and, again, I don't say that in any type of kudos for myself, because there were so many people that helped me to get there, including starting with my mom and living with my dad, and I had a guidance counselor in high school who literally was like my mom. Her name is Penny, who just literally bought me clothes, did, you know, bought my prom dress for me, helped me teach me how to drive. I'm an exchange student in Japan, and she, you know, prepared with my dad for me to go there. So it's on the shoulders of many, but I am a first-generation college grad for my family, and many have started the journey to get their degree since then.
Right. You're similar to me, where I was the youngest, and there were people before me that made it a little bit easier for me to do what I do and to be able to go a little bit further within my field. You ended up playing college basketball at Xavier in Cincinnati, and I think it's such an interesting story. Can you explain to our listeners how you ended up getting a scholarship there?
Sure. Well, my twin brother, Aaron, really, he was the rock star basketball player. In high school, I didn't have a name. My name was Aaron's sister, really. And so I started playing basketball really late in the eighth grade, and my twin, the always caretaker that he was, because he was so good and so popular, whenever he got offers to colleges, he would always mention me, a kind mention, and ask them to at least consider me. So he went to Xavier and in Cincinnati and asked them to at least consider me. I had a decent record. I don't know if I could take you one-on-one, Sylvia. I mean, I could maybe for strong minutes, half court, maybe. But so they did consider me, and I got an academic athletic scholarship because Aaron had given them a verbal commitment. But at that time, he was still visiting schools, and as it would end up being, he visited a few more schools, and he ended up actually signing at a different school, at Jacksonville State. So I had to show up at Xavier's campus without Aaron, the superstar. And so it was an interesting maybe first 60 days, but other than that, all was well, and ended up finishing in really good graces.
Time out right here. I feel like you challenged me, and you know how competitive I am, Karen. You got to see it firsthand last week.
So
the next time I come to Chicago, get your tennis shoes out. That's all I have to say.
No problem. More than 3 minutes. I'm just going to tell you that right now.
I have to tell our listeners that I was at my niece's birthday party, and Karen's son was there, and they had a DJ, and he was doing the Dougie, and I felt like he was getting the best of me. Everybody was dancing, you know, but he was getting the best of me. I felt like he was challenging me, so I broke out and started breakdancing in the middle of the party. That was like my last trump card.
Exactly.
My sister and brother did that to me. I'm extremely competitive. I blame them for it. But anyways, what was your role on your team at Xavier?
I was a really, really small forward. We had just gone Division I, and I like to say, because Xavier in the last couple of years was ranked in the top five in the NCAA, but I'd like to say that our team set the foundation for Xavier because we got smashed the whole time that I was there as we journeyed from Division II to Division I. So I was a tall center, a small center, and a small forward, really.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
We do have a question from a Charisse. Can we put Charisse through? Let me see if I can. She says a 276. Charisse, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, did you have a question for Karen or myself?
I do. How are you?
Hi, Charisse, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Good.
I'm currently pursuing my degree in education. Mm-hmm. I'm starting my, getting kind of my foot in the door with the educational system in my area, working as a special education and paraprofessional.
Mm-hmm.
In about 3 years, I will complete my doctorate in education. I'm wondering what recommendations you would have for a career path outside of the classroom with a doctorate in education.
Is that for me or for Sylvia?
Whichever feels like they're more able to answer the question.
That's out of my territory. Karen, you want to take that? Tell us what your major was. What was your major, Karen?
My major was marketing, and I have a master's in business.
Oh, okay.
My undergrad is marketing, my master's in business. I have a dream of getting my PhD one day. I do have a couple of friends. One friend in particular just completed her PhD as well. And the path that seems to be a prevalent one is it remains in education at the college level is what she's trying to do so that at some point you can reach tenure and be in the administrative side of colleges. So that's about all the experience I have with it.
Okay, my undergrad is psychology and special education. I had my master's is in teaching and instruction, and then my doctorate is going to use an EDD in education and curriculum writing. So I was just trying to get some advice on it.
Yeah, I think you could be a professor. If you major in psychology, every basketball team in America needs you. I think every team needs a sports psychologist, so you may want to try there. But I would go to your you have a career service program at your school. I would go there and just kind of research all the things within your major, all the career paths. And then I would actually recommend that you shadow someone. Once you find a career path that you like, that you shadow someone in that field just to see if that's something that you like in terms of all their responsibilities before you dive headfirst into that career. So hopefully that helps. Okay. So, Charisse, if you have another question, feel free to press 1 and we'll let you back through. But thank you for your question. Karen. At the time that you graduated from college, there was not a professional league in the U.S. If you wanted to pursue basketball further, you had to go abroad. So basically, you knew you had to be serious about academics. In hindsight, would you still choose the same major?
I would. I'll tell you, my path with basketball was a very much a means to an end. I played after being recruited for a few years because I was tall and didn't really want to play. So I didn't grow up, you know, like we do, like my daughter or my son now that started playing. I played because by default because I was tall. I was one of the tallest people in the class, and the coaches wouldn't let me pass through the hallway without at least trying out. So I started late. I think I could have been so much more of a better ball player had I started early. So the fact that I even ended up with a scholarship, it's just another testimony of God's unmerited favor on my life, for sure. It was an academic athletic scholarship. So even probably if there was a WNBA, I'm not sure that that was a path I would have wanted to take. I've always been very struck by business, and as many people who know me, every now and then I like to take the leadership role periodically. And so I think I was destined to end up in business for sure.
Okay. I always wonder that because there's a lot of people who they don't work in their field, or if they had to do it again, they probably would choose a different major. So I just wonder. You are 6 feet tall, just to give our listeners a visual.
Mm-hmm.
And your husband is 6'3".
Mm-hmm.
You have an 11-year-old daughter, Brittany, who I love dearly. She's 5'11". And Donovan, the guy who beat me out on the dance floor, he's 6'3" at age 15.
Mm-hmm.
So as a family, when you guys go to the grocery store or to church or, you know, wherever you go as a family, I'm sure you have multiple people staring at you. What do you tell your children when people are staring at them or picking on them at school? What is it that you tell them?
Well, in particular, I think it's more readily accepted and celebrated for a guy to be tall. So Donovan really doesn't experience a whole lot of, you know, being picked on at school. Brittany really hasn't either. But the one thing we have taught them, especially my conversations with Brittany as a former tall girl, and her being a tall girl, she's much taller than I was at her age, is to always walk up straight. We rehearse some of the mean things that can be said just so that she's prepared and nothing comes as a surprise. We talk about being proud as tall people. You know, we forget we're tall until we're with other people that we realize we're tall, literally, because it's
mm-hmm.
normal. I mean, so it's not like
mm-hmm.
we walk up. We are so tall. This is normal. And so we try to teach our children that this is normal and we should, actually a little above normal, and we should be happy about it, proud about it. And as a girl, to walk tall and straight and graceful and to really love being a tall woman or a tall girl. And that conversation has been happening since they were 3 and 4.
I laughed when I saw Brittany at Kayla's birthday party only because she's really a true child, and I saw so much of myself in her. It's almost as if she doesn't realize that she is literally head and shoulders above all the rest of the kids. And I tell the story a lot, but I didn't realize how tall I was until I went to the prom and we took a picture. And then afterwards, I saw the picture of me and all my friends, and I had on like a little kitten heel, not really high heels, but when I saw the picture, that's when it really hit me, like, oh, my goodness, I am really, really tall. So she just, you know, she's a true kid, you know. She's 11. At 11, I was still playing with Cabbage Patch dolls. I had a bang and one ponytail, you know, maybe two ponytails. And she was just kind of out there playing with all the rest of the kids. And it was almost as if she didn't even know that, you know, it didn't even matter to her that the kids were, you know, below her shoulders. So it was very good to see, you know.
My baby.
I think you did a good job of esteeming her.
Thank you. Thank you very much. My husband does the same.
Yeah, and that's important. I always say on this show that, you know, the father-daughter kind of relationship and how fathers esteem their daughters is very important, especially at her age. I want to talk a little bit about McDonald's. How did your experience at McDonald's prepare you for just kind of what you're doing now, or your, you know, just your life now?
I have to first just, you know, say what an absolutely incredible company McDonald's is. And, you know, I always said when I joined the company 20 years ago, I had no idea what went on behind the scenes of a Big Mac. And it's a lot, a ton. Absolute incredible opportunities. I would tell you that, you know, thriving on the competitive side as a former athlete and the constant, you know, being number one in the industry as well has just really helped me to develop and further to develop, actually, leadership skills. McDonald's, as I said earlier, afforded me so many opportunities for growth where I had to return to the bottom of the learning curve and jump right back up into some type of mastery level and then quickly return back to the bottom of the learning curve. Every time you get promoted, you typically go back to the bottom of the learning curve. And doing that repeatedly really helped me to obviously adapt to situations very quickly, exposed to so many different things around the world because we're a global company. So I could go on and on about the many things under the heading of leadership and, you know, even family and the supportive things that McDonald's did for me on my journey. When I was 8 months pregnant when an opportunity came for me to become an officer of the company, which is a pretty big deal in most corporate arenas. And someone even told me back then, you know, that, you know, being pregnant is going to really stifle your opportunities for growth. Well, we were going to have a family. It was our second child, and so that really wasn't an option. And we had, obviously, our source was much higher than people here on earth. God was our ultimate source, and that's who our trust was in. But long story short, I was 8 months pregnant, and I got a call from the then divisional president that said, I'd like to interview you for a job to get you promoted for officer. Mind you, this was the same time that McDonald's was actually laying people off. So it was, I was getting promoted in the midst of a really trying time, which is just very sad. It was a tough time for everyone, but also a glimmer of God's favor on my life. So anyway, he called and I said, I would love to interview. He was in Chicago and I was in Atlanta. I said, I'd love to interview, but I'm 8 months pregnant and I can't travel. And he said, no problem. The divisional president, flew down to Atlanta, interviewed me in the area that I lived in, offered me the job, told me to take as much time as I needed, come back when I wanted, and the officer position was waiting for me. I don't think you could find that in many companies.
No, that's favor.
Yep. And
that's
a wonderful
and a favor.
To great leadership at McDonald's.
Right. What would you well, before I go to that, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back with your greatest timeout moment right after this.
You all know and love her. So you think you know something about fantasy sports, huh? Well, I've got a challenge for you. Would you be willing to go head-to-head against some of the best minds in fantasy sports? Like the FSP crew, The Master, Black, Jeff the Joker, and others. Well, for a limited time, you can acquire your own fantasy team. That's right, you can own a fantasy football, baseball, or basketball team and beat the host of fantasy sports and politics at their own game. For more information, go to fantasysportsandpolitics.web.com. That's fantasysportsandpolitics.web.com.
We are live on Time Out with Karen Wells. And for those of you who are just tuning in, a timeout moment is that period of time where you pause, assess the situation, correct some things, regroup, and resume with an opportunity to perform better. And we just heard Karen speak about one of her other timeout moments, and so now she's going to share with us her greatest timeout moment. Karen, are you still there?
I am.
Okay. can you share with us what you consider your greatest timeout moment?
My greatest one And I'm going to make this really quick. They blended together. It's twofold. My first one was in 2008 when I had three multiple surgeries in a year. Within 30 days. And I was out of work for 6 months. I couldn't eat or drink for 30 days. I was in multiple hospitals. The doctor said I'd never have a normal life. I was taking 19 pills a day when I got out of the hospital. I had seven tubes in my body at the time. I had open-heart surgery on my stomach, so they removed my esophagus and pulled my stomach up to create a new esophagus. And it was supposed to be just a minor surgery, and I was supposed to be in Mexico with our family in 3 weeks. I ended up being in the hospital for 6 months. So in the prayers of my husband and my mom and my really good friend Susan that and my family that took me through that journey was incredible. And my timeout moment was just the appreciation of life and love and family. As I climbed the corporate ladder, I missed a lot of family moments. Ruth Barton is an author of a book called Longing for More, and she says that when you say yes to something, you say no to something else. And I had a reflection on, all those blessings that McDonald's had afforded me, that God had given me, came at a price. I didn't get to do quite a few things with my children. So when I was in the hospital, it was a lot of time, or with my husband. It was a big time out on what's important in life. And when I returned from my journey in the hospital, thank God, to normal, they said I never eat 6 ounces of food. I can eat a Big Mac meal for the Coke, no problem. Now, I will continue to, you know, exercise and do all those things that come along with eating in moderation. But long story short, when I returned to work, my second one moment was when my daughter...
Wait. Before you go to that, I've got a question. You said in preparation for this interview, you said that it was self-inflicted. Explain to our listeners what you meant by that.
Well, there's a scripture that says life and death is in the power of the tongue. And just let me tell you, before I went on sick leave, I was going through a really interesting time in my corporate path, and there were some things that I was going through, as we all do at work. And I began to just speak, you know what, I'm going to go on sick leave. I'm going on sick leave. I'm going to take me a break. I'm going to be gone for about 6 months. I'm going to get the surgery done. I'm going to recover and everything's going to be fine. But I kept speaking, I'm going on sick leave and I'm going to be gone for 6 months. Now, mind you, the minor surgery that I was supposed to have, that I had, my first one, was only supposed to be out for 3 weeks. And so, as I shared with you earlier, I had exactly what I said I was going to have. I went on sick leave and I most definitely was out for 6 months. And the way that I was out, and the three surgeries later, and the major surgery, and the going back and forth to the emergency room, and, you know, everything I just described to you was not quite what I had planned, but I certainly spoke it into existence. Now, if I could, on the flip side of that, while I was in the hospital, life and death is in the power of the tongue. When the doctor told me your life's going to be miserable from this point forward, I looked him in the eye and said, I refuse to accept your report. And they said, you'll never eat again. And I said, I'm not going to accept your report. And truly, God delivered on that as well. So I'm actually completely normal with no medications and no issues. So life and death is in the power of the tongue. We've got to be very careful what we speak into existence.
Wow. What a powerful lesson, you know, to learn from that. What was the impact of it? Like, how was your family impacted from this?
Yeah, it was pretty devastating. My husband my mother was taking vacations with us. So she had flown up to go on vacation with us. She ended up staying with us for 3 months. But my husband was at the hospital every day. My mom and my husband stayed in the hospital with me. My children took it really hard. Our daughter was very young then, and she would cry at school, and the teachers would call. And I was extremely private, a lot of that rooted in pride, but I was very private, so no one knew what the heck was going on. They just knew I was in the hospital. It was hard. Our son started doing some very interesting things. It weighed heavily on our family. It really did. But my husband was, and my mom were prayer warriors like you wouldn't believe. In the middle of the night when I was in tremendous pain and the doctors didn't know what was going on, it brought our family a whole lot closer, for sure.
Hmm. Okay, now you can go to the other timeout moment with your daughter.
This is the one that it brings tears to my eyes, really. When I got out of the hospital, my daughter some of my good nights. I was in town for a couple of days, and so I was kissing her goodnight, and I love all my hugs and kisses from the children. So I was kissing her goodnight, and she was crying. And I said, well, what's wrong? And she began to describe to me. She said she was talking with her friends at school, and all of them were talking about it. You know, it really chokes me up when I talk about this, but she said all of her friends were talking about all these special moments they had with their mom. And she said that from the, you know, daily reading of stories and in the bed to the going to the ice cream shops, small things, I thought. And she said, Mom, I just couldn't come up with any. It brought tears to my eyes. And she said, actually, I cried profusely, to tell you the truth. And she just said, I couldn't think of any. And, of course, I'm like, well, what about the trip to Aruba? That was a really great moment. What about the big trip here and the big trip there? What about when we went to Disney? And that's not what she was talking about. That was not what she was talking about. And so that was a timeout for me. That was a timeout for me. I and my husband had to make a decision. And before I left McDonald's, I was about to be promoted to senior vice president. It was going to be unprecedented. I was having the time of my life and a job that I loved. But I had to say yes to my family and no at this time to the continued path corporately, because for many years I said no to these special moments that were important to her and yes, you know, to my career path. I can't do it. There are many women who apparently can do it all, but I couldn't. I struggled.
Right. And so now, go ahead.
I said, so I came home. Went and talked to McDonald's, was once again the leadership at McDonald's. They were unbelievable. I mean, I can't say enough about the support that I received as I made what was a really, with my husband, tough decision. And I tendered my resignation in 2011. I went to a part-time officer for McDonald's and worked on a few projects for the past year, and then fully retired in 2012, and came home to be with my baby, with my husband.
So, what have you noticed a difference with your daughter since you've been home?
Absolutely, the time we spend together, just from car time, and all I did all summer long was drove endless hours around Naperville. I must have put at least 150 miles in my car every day, just taking the kids to different camps and different opportunities, or out to ice cream or Funway or whatever the case may be. And it is a big difference. And I wanted to be home. My husband and I said when she was born that we wanted me home on that special day that she became a lady, if you know what I mean. And we made that deadline. We were excited. So,
well, now I'm sure she can think of many special moments, you know, as other kids are reminiscing about their special moments. She has some to contribute. So,
yeah. I can't, you know, about the past, but we can just forge forward in the future, Sylvia.
Oh, yeah. When you know better, you do better.
Yep.
Okay, what I want to talk about your husband's school. How did that come about?
My husband has had a dream since Brittany really was born. He was in the military for 10 years, and then when I became on the executive track for McDonald's, he became a stay-at-home dad, which takes an unbelievable, incredible man to do that with high level of confidence. And so we did that, and as a result, as we traveled to different states with McDonald's, the kids were in child care for a portion of the day, and we had a chance to see a lot of preschools. And that's when, after retiring from from the Army, he said, I don't want to go back into a traditional job. I want to own my own business. And he put his dream on hold for 10 years until, we reached a certain level of financials the goals we set out and the timing to leave McDonald's. So he wanted to open a preschool. He surveyed several, and the Goddard School, which is where our children went as preschoolers, was by far the best franchise school in the nation. And that's how we ended up as owners.
And he is a rock star in that building. The children absolutely adore him. The parents love him. He walks in the classroom and the kids go crazy. So it's my honor to support him in his dream as he did with me for the last 20 years at McDonald's.
Wow. And so now you have an AIW consulting firm. Can you explain to our listeners what the AIW stands for? Because I fell for it hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah,
I want to explain
so
to them.
Exactly. I'm so glad you asked, Sylvia. So in the hallways of McDonald's, every morning everybody would say good morning, good morning. And the quintessential question is, how are you? And I would always answer, literally, all is well. It was one of the things I would always say. Many of you know in the Bible the story of the woman whose child had died, and she went to see the prophet, and they said, the husband said, are you okay? All is well. And everyone she met, all was well. And so even in her tough times, she always said that. So AIW stands for All is Well. And it was a dream of mine. I thought after leaving corporate America that with my experiences that I could absolutely, as I did in the walls, coach and mentor other women in business, a huge philanthropic arm on the AIW group to give back. And my husband and I had committed that a huge portion of any income that we get in from that would not go to us, but to go back to other people in need. And so, and to be a motivational speaker, which was a true gift that God has given me. Well, that was a great dream. And in fact, I had a chance, I had my first company that I had a chance to consult, which was in your family with your sister, and we had a great time, Helen. And I had to say no. I had to say no to the AIW group because it was taken away from my ability to help my husband in school, and it was taken away from time with our children. And so I turned business down, and it's on hold until God's appointed time for me to do it. My gifts that he's given me won't go away. They'll make room for me.
So do you have like your website and your business cards and everything's ready to go, but you just have that placed on hold, or you haven't actually started moving towards that yet?
Started the website. Never got a business card printed. Never got one printed. Had a few clients lined up and still from a coaching standpoint and consulting, but I turned them down and just put it on. It's not dead. It's just on hold. I'll continue to pay my business fee every year, keep the name. I'm excited about it's time. It's just not right now.
Okay. Okay. Well, we have a question. We have a caller from area code 630. Helen, are you there?
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Do you have a question for Karen?
I have a question for Karen. Karen, it sounds like you have done what's on most people's bucket list. So my question to you is, given everything you've done already, what haven't you done that you still want to do outside of AIW?
Thanks, Helen. I had a few things on my bucket list. I would like to pursue my PhD one day in organizational behavior. I would like to learn how to speak Spanish fluently. That's on my bucket list. I'd like for our children to go to Duke and UNC for free. It's still on my bucket list. So
I'm voting for UNC.
I know you are. So I still have quite a few things. Thanks for asking, though.
And to go to Martha's Vineyard, you've got to put that on your bucket list.
It is. A girlfriend's week, that would be nice on my bucket list.
Thank you, Helen, for your question. Do you have anything else for Karen? No? Thank you. If you have any more questions, just press 1. Thank you. Okay, Karen, basically Helen took my question. I was going to say, what's next for Karen after doing so much? But we heard your bucket list there. I want to thank you for coming on the show. Like you said earlier, sometimes people can see your resume and kind of hear about what you've done or read about it in a newspaper, but they don't know the dash in between and kind of what you went through in order to get there. And I think it's, you know, as you told your story, I heard a couple of things. Throughout your life, your life took turns as you spoke certain things out of your mouth, you know. So your earlier time out moment when you were a little child, when you said you accepted Christ into your life and you stood on a church porch and you said, God, I know you have something better for my life. You spoke those words and then better came to you. You know, you ended up getting a scholarship to Xavier, and how you got that scholarship is an incredible story. You know, they were after your brother, and somehow you got a scholarship, you know, and they honored that. I'm a coach. That is very – what happened to you is very, very rare that someone would take a twin sibling, and it happens here or there, but if that one of the twins don't show up at that school, it is very rare that they would keep that other twin and just kind of honor that, you know. Somehow they will find a way to kind of run you off the team, you know. They find some kind of running test or something, lifting test that you couldn't do. So, I mean, I think you spoke those things into existence for your life, and that was in a good and bad way. You know, like you said, there's life and death in the power of the tongue. And when you were sick, you said, I'm going to be out for 6 months. And you went in, and you were supposed to be in for something minor, and you ended up being in there for 6 months. You know, you spoke the hospital term that you were in there for, you know. And so what a powerful lesson that, you know, you can speak things into existence, you know, for your children, saying, I want my kids to go to Duke and Carolina, you know, and sit back and watch those things come to pass. And so I think, you know, you took an interesting route, and out of all your mother's children, you were the youngest, and you ended up getting a scholarship. And really, you know, you had some people help you along the way, but you blazed a trail that you really didn't see anyone travel. And now you get to guide your kids through that. And you've been where they're going. And hopefully they exceed you. That's what every parent wants, you know. But it makes perfect sense to me and to our listeners that you said no to the corporate track and you're saying yes to spending more time with your family, because God allowed you to take an incredible route, and now you have an opportunity to guide your children through that same path, you know, and you'll be there to spend those moments with them to guide them through that, you know. And it takes courage to do that. It takes courage to say no to McDonald's, you know, or to your job or to the business that you created for yourself. You're putting that on hold for your family. And it takes a plan to do that, because you still have to feed your family, you know. And so sometimes we can work so hard to provide for our families that we miss those important moments. You know, we don't often take time out to spend quality time and be present for those special moments in our family lives. So we commend you and your husband for reciprocating love for each other and for your family. So I want to thank you for being on the show. I think our listeners would agree that we have learned from your story. And before I close, I want to leave everyone with this thought. We are snared by the words of our mouth. Life and death is in the power of the tongue. Speak life into your situation. Speak over your household. Speak over your children. Quit calling them bad. You know, my mom has a problem with saying that kids are bad. Quit calling your kids bad. Speak life over your finances. Karen, is there anything that you want to leave our listeners with before I close?
Yeah, if I could, I think one of the most powerful things that I learned was the whole concept you and I talked about, and this will take 1 minute, and that is when we say yes, you know, to something, we are saying no to something else. And our challenge then is to say yes to the most important things and the things that God has brought to us in this time and place. And in doing so, we'll make room in our life for meaning and value. And we will feel God's pleasure and presence upon us. And the Spirit will move us into a high level of purposeful living. Will it be frightening at times? Yes. Will it be risky? More than staying in a quiet harbor. Will it be exhilarating? You bet. And will it be fulfilling? Just put it this way, it's the only way to live. And that's a quote out of Ruth Barton's Longing for More. And I'll end it with that.
Okay. We have Marion on the call who wants to share something. Marion, are you there? Marion, are you there?
Here. I'm here.
Okay, did you have something? Did you want
to
share something?
Yes, I just wanted to say thank you to both of you. I'm a first-time listener, and I've enjoyed Karen, and I've enjoyed you as well. You've inspired me and encouraged me to, you know, evaluate my dream and to prioritize what I'm doing in my life. And I just thank God that I've had this opportunity to listen to both of you today. It's really been a blessing.
Thanks, Mary. Thank you so much for that.
For calling in.
Thank you.
For listening.
And hopefully you'll tune in again, Marion. I want to.
I definitely
go ahead,
will.
Marion. Oh, thank you so much.
I definitely will listen again.
Thank you so much. I want to close with this because this week, I would say for the past 2 weeks, I got really tired of the media feeding us negative news. And so, guess what, Time Out listeners? I'm media too. And on this show, I have the power to change what the media is feeding us. So I'm going to end this show by giving you a good report and speaking some positive things into your life. You are smart enough. And whatever you don't know, you can Google and YouTube on the internet. You are connected enough. You are two friends away from who you need to know on Facebook anyways. You are pretty enough. God fearfully and wonderfully made you exactly the way you are on purpose. You are equipped enough. Just use what you already have in your hands. You are organized enough, and it is not too late. You are young enough to start that dreaminess in your heart. You are enough. I'm Sylvia Crawley. You're listening to Time Out. I will see you next week live for the very first time with Charlotte Smith. Look on my Facebook Time Out page for details, and we will see you same time next week. Take a time out.
Tell me what you want, tell me what you see, where you want to go, what you want to be. If you have a dream, you can make it there with a lot of work and a lot of prayer. If you take your time, gotta be precise, gotta have a plan, double check it twice. Wait, hold up, slow down, they won't need advice. Someone's gone before, maybe talk to them, then after you do, go and talk to him. Great, it's gonna come, maybe not tonight, take your time today, teach you something right.
Got a lot of friends, made a lot of ends, Twitter, you the trend, him a Bentley Benz, but you moving kind of fast. Keep sweating, you gotta make it last. Live every day like it's your last, but don't forget to have a blast.